Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're talking about the Billy Meier case this evening. If you don't know, Billy Meier is a one-armed farmer from Switzerland. He's in his late 70s. He lives about 52 minutes east of Zurich in a beautiful green forested area called Hinterschmidruti, which is It's a tiny mountain village there in Switzerland, and Billy has a building there called the Semyose Silver Star Center, which is kind of a monument to his contacts with an extraterrestrial woman named Semyose, and it's the headquarters for a group of people that meet worldwide called the FIGU or the FIGU, and they translate Billy's writings and help publish his materials around the world. There's a FIGU Canada, FIGU Australia. I believe there's a FIGU USA right now, if I'm not mistaken. But Billy has had a very interesting life. He studied the religions of the world. He had 11 years of extraterrestrial contact with a man named Spoth, 11 years of extraterrestrial contact with a woman named Asket. Then he had about 11 years of a normal life, and his contacts picked up again in the early 70s with a woman named Semyose. Those contacts lasted about 4 years until Semyose was involved in an accident. Those contacts were cut short. And then up until the current day, Billy gets occasional meetings with two men, one named Ptah and the other Quetzal. And these extraterrestrials, most of them are from what's called the Pleiaren star system, which is about 80 light years beyond our Pleiades in a different space-time configuration. His contacts with Asket are slightly different because she is from a parallel universe to ours called the Tao universe. And what I'm going to do this evening is talk a little bit about these star systems and the ancient past and the relationship to the Meier contacts. The humans in our universe was created about 46 trillion years ago, and two parallel universes were created. One's called the Dern universe, and the other is called the Tao universe. We are living in the Dern universe, D-E-R-N, in a galaxy that's called the Milky Way. The stars in our sister universe, the Tao universe, are not quite as spread as far as the stars in our universe are. Our star systems are typically light years away. The Meier material says there are something to the effect of 7.5 million solar systems that support higher human life. There were originally 79 pure human races created by creation, and now there is an incredible number of human beings. It's just a gigantic number with something like 63 zeros. There's a great deal of diversity among humanity in our universe. There are people that are actually only 16 inches tall on other worlds, and there are people that are some 40 feet tall. They call our Milky Way galaxy a barred spiral galaxy. It's about 120 light years in diameter, depending on where your currently at. There are somewhere between 2 and 400 billion stars, and we don't know how many planets there are. There are at least that many planets. Our solar system is located within 2/3 of the way around our galactic center on the inner edge of a spiral-shaped concentration of gas. And this spiral-shaped concentration of gas is called the Orion Arm. And that's at the place where many stars are birthed. We don't know the exact figure of how many very low mass stars there are, dwarf stars, which are very hard to detect, especially at these distances that are greater than 300 light years. We have a difficulty detecting these other stars. However, one of our neighboring galaxies has as many as 1 trillion stars. So, again, we're just giving the estimates there, saying that there are 200 to 400 billion stars in our galaxy. Now, these Pleiadians that Billy meets with say that our forefathers are their forefathers, and that the oldest branch of the human race, of which that the Pleiadians are aware of anyway, are called the Lyrians. And the Lyrians first settled in our galaxy in the constellation of Lyra. And the constellation of Lyra is about 20 to 30 light years from Earth. And the ancient homeworlds of the Lyrians were near Vega. Vega is the Lyrians' brightest star. And it's one of the brightest stars in our night sky, and it forms something called the Summer Triangle, which I guess is 3 stars. There are binary stars in Lyra Vega, and these binary stars are so close that the material from one flows to the other, and these stars have become egg-shaped over the many eons. Again, Vega is the brightest star in Lyra, and it's the 5th brightest star in the night sky, and it's the 2nd brightest star in what we call our northern celestial hemisphere. Arcturus is probably the brightest star, and it's a relatively close star. Arcturus is only 25 light years from Earth. Vega has been studied by astronomers for many years, and for some reason even our astronomers consider Vega to be extremely important. Now, near Vega is something called the Ring Nebula, which we'll talk more about later this evening. It's a planetary nebula in the northern constellation of Lyra. And these kind of objects are formed when a shell of ionized gas is expelled into the surrounding interstellar medium by a red giant star. And a red giant is one of these massive red stars. And these red giants, in the last stage of their evolution, compress into what's called a white dwarf. Now, how does all of this information relate to the Maya material? Well, in the ancient past, and these dates I can never completely trust, but I'll give these some of these dates to you. About 26 million years ago, there was a galaxy called the Lyren galaxy, which was talked about in Contact Report 238. And that Nocodamian, probably the earliest lifetime of the spirit form that's in Edward Albert Meyer that we know of, this ancient teacher known as Nocodamian left the home worlds with his people, and they settled on the Lyra Vega star system. However, the star system that they settled in was a different time-space configuration than our system. And it's in the Meyer information, it says it shifted a little and only a fraction of a second from our present time. Now, we're given limited information about this, and I've read in the contact notes where there's good reasons why they can't tell us any more than that. They will admit that there are more than three different space-time configurations. But other than that, they can't tell us yet for whatever reason. Maybe that would be information that we could use to destroy ourselves. In any sense, Nokedamion and his people came out of the depths of the universe and they settled themselves in the oldest space-time shifted area of the Milky Way galaxy. So I'm going to speculate a little bit. These extraterrestrial humans know how to dial into these older space-time dimensions. They know how to shift or travel through these different space-time dimensions, these space-time configurations. However, this spirit form, Nokedamion, had been on other exoduses, it says here. He established, and it says he created his people on a planet called Sadar, which he came from galaxies and planets older than this Lyran galaxy. In Contact 248, Billy talks about Vega and Lyra a little bit more. I'll read this to you. Billy says, let's leave this subject. Let's go to the next question, which relates to where the original Lyrians actually came from before they settled in the areas of Lyra and Vega. Patah answers Billy and says, the time of the first emigration dates back to 110 million years ago, and their place of origin was a planet named Kados in the distant galaxy known as the Nagaran Galaxy, at an average distance from our solar system of 6.3 billion light years, a distance I can't even imagine. In an interview that Billy did in 1988, he talked about the Lyrians and the Vegans a little bit. He said that the first extraterrestrials to come to the Earth were not the Pleiaren, but humans from worlds that exist within another dimension in the area of the Lyra and Vega systems. These Lyrians came here with the Vegans about 22 million years ago. Now, their stay was very brief, and they continued their travels to other star clusters and planets. Their history is pretty obscure to us. Even although assault groups, these Lyrians were very militaristic, would occasionally come back to the Earth. About 389,000 years ago, several million of these Lyrians and Vegans, they left their own native worlds. They entered our order of space and time in our current dimension. They came to Earth and they mingled with the Earthlings. They procreated with Earth humans in the normal manner, and they also did genetic engineering. The genetic engineering that they engaged in resulted in humans that were part human and part animal. They also included what we would call giants, titans, and other creatures. One of the creatures they created was called the Seraphim, and the Seraphim, I believe, was a cross were animal-human. It was an animal-human hybrid as well. Now, in our Bible, we kind of have this idea that the Seraphim were six-winged angels. But these were the result of genetic engineering, according to Meyer material. In the course of hundreds and thousands of years, these creatures that I've just described to you, they were displaced. They eventually died out because they could not reproduce, or because the conditions on Earth were not suitable for them for various reasons as conditions changed on the Earth. There were some very large planets in the constellation of Lyra. And, you know, some of this comes from information that Randy Winters allegedly gathered from the Meyer material. So you can take it with a bit of a grain of salt. It says the Lyrians were 20 to 30 feet tall. I'm not sure that they were that large. That they would sometimes take control of lesser developed civilizations on lesser developed worlds. One of the contact reports talks about a weapon that the Lyrians had that would destroy entire worlds. And sometimes the these battles that the Lyrians had were extremely lopsided. And I believe that there is a little bit of information that comes from theyfly.com, which basically reflects some of the information that I described to you. It talks about, let me read it to you. This is part of the Contact Report 70, but it must be a different translation. It says, often by evil power, they produce new possibilities for living and new space for life, as they need this for the prevailing number of human beings of their nations. They were especially the scientists who explored space for more and more new worlds and solar systems, and to perform this was no problem for them, because their ships were equipped with all technical means, which made them absolutely powerful masters. Their weapons were of great power and fighting efficiency, in consequence of which fights against whole nations of strange worlds were short and one-sided. The Lyrians would win quickly and decisively. Especially the scientists recognized in the run of time the unlimited possibilities of spiritual forces. Thus, they sponsored these by the collection of immense knowledge and developed for them, and became the Ishwishes of the past, the kings of wisdom. Some of these Ishwishes were not so advanced in terms of their spiritual knowledge. What does it say here? It says, the IHWH seized by violent means in trying to stifle all of that in its bud, but wherein they did not completely succeed. By the ambitious ones, innumerable human beings were killed and simply eliminated by horrible weapons. So some of these Lyrian Ishwishes were not kings of wisdom in terms of the spiritual teachings, but perhaps in science and other fields. There was kind of a war that broke out in the Lyra Vega systems. In Earth chronology, the outbreak of the Liberation War in the Lyra Vega systems was about 230,000 years ago. So about 230,000 years ago, one of these Ishwishes by the name of Asael saw that this whole war in Lyra Vega was not a good thing, and he grabbed a fleet of 183 motherships and some 253 smaller ships, with a total crew, I think, of about 360,000 people, and they left the Lyra Vega system, and I think these were the original group that eventually became the Plyaran. So the Plyaran descended from the Lyrians. The Lyrians are the original human beings, supposedly, in our galaxy. Now, these Plyaran settled on a world called Era in the Plyaran star system. Era is about 500 light years from Earth, and it's on the other side of the Pleiades star cluster in a different space-time configuration. Again, Era is the home world of Ptah and Quetzal and Semyase and Sfoth. It's a member of the Plyaran Federation. Some interesting things about Era. Era has no money. They have only robot-assisted manufacturing, but I think most of the manufacturing occurs off-world. They've eradicated poverty. Food, energy, and housing are free. They have monogamy and polygamy. Some men will have more than one wife, but not the other way around. Very little homosexuality or bisexuality, because they recognize that that's a natural genetic disorder that can be corrected very quickly. And they also have some kind of advanced astrology that allows couples to match up properly. Let me jump back a second to Lyra Vega, and I'm going to get back and revisit the Ring Nebula, because this is the title I put down on the show, but you know how I bounce all over the place. And all the Meyer material is linked, and you'll find that. In Contact 31, Pital describes the Ring Nebula this way. He says, "Then so shall it be, but first we want to head for a few special destinations. When you finish taking your pictures there," he's talking to Billy, "we will jump to what's called JHWH Mata." So they make this hyperleap, and Billy is now looking at this gigantic image surrounded by countless stars of all sizes, and he sees something that looks like a colossal eye that's staring at him through the blackness of space. And it's incredibly far away still, but the gigantic eye stares through space, and that's what it's called, the JHWH, the Eye of God. Semyase says to Billy, "It's unmistakable, isn't it?" And Billy says, "Yes, and it's gigantic." Semyase says, "I have already explained to you the origin and the cause of this structure." Billy says, "I know, it's all written down." Pata says, "It is for us a symbol of evil lust for power and domination, a symbol of hate, destruction, and power. It's a symbol of human madness. That in contrast to other similar natural formations. This is the work of man." Billy says, "I know. Semyase has explained it all to me. Here in this constellation was also the original home of the first Earth human races." Pata says, "Yes, that was a long time ago. For the Earth human, it's just an image in the universe called the Ring Nebula. But for us, it is of very great importance." And Pata continues and says, "Occupy yourself now with your photographic equipment, and you'll have the next 5 minutes for yourself." And they're about to take a hyperleap away from the Ring Nebula. Again, I'm going to throw out a few things that have happened in the past that is related to our topics this evening. The dates I may or may not apply, because I don't always trust the dates that are given on the Future of Mankind site. But about 7 billion years ago, according to Future Mankind site, the Syrian creator overlords lost knowledge of their true ancestry and origin. And they lost the capability to defend themselves. And they started to genetically engineer warrior races. And these warrior races eventually, much later, committed mutiny, and they escaped, and they were helped to cross the galaxy. Some arrive on what's called the planet Kudra in the Nisan star system, and that was the home for the Oriental people. Others landed on Mars and Melona in the Sol system, and that occurred allegedly about 7 billion years ago. And as you may remember, Melona was another planet in our star system that was destroyed in the past. It's now our asteroid belt. Melona lies between Mars and Jupiter, and it once had about 400 million human beings on it who were descendants of the genetically manipulated people that originated from the Sirius star system. According to the Future Mankind site, 72,000 years ago, the human beings on Melona fought a great war. And what they did is they diverted an ocean into a volcano, which split their planet apart. And that's talked about in contact report 4. Now, this is what Semyase said. She said that man on earth must get accustomed to the thought that his predecessors have forced all of mankind and earth itself to the brink of ruin and had to partially evacuate the planet in a wild escape. It should also serve as a warning to him that their thirst for power and barbarism are attributes that bring death. A second race, Semyase explains, also had to experience this truth in your solar system. In their unlimited hatred and unquenchable thirst for power, they destroy themselves right down to the last man, and scarcely a creature survived the conflict. They eliminated and destroyed their own planet with a huge explosion, and now it only is many thousands of asteroids. This planet is also called Phaeton, and it's described in Contact Report 251. And they again, it tells the story of these people who blew up their planet by diverting an ocean into subterranean and underwater magma chambers of a gigantic volcano. And they destroyed their world that way. So in any case, we've not taken the best stewardship of our planet, and we've even been involved in the destruction of entire planets. Interesting contact report in 182, contact report 182, and Quetzal and Billy are in a very interesting discussion. Kind of a side tangent from our topic tonight, but I thought it would be interesting to throw in. Billy says, "All right, but you know that sometimes I just have rather large difficulties with my memory, so now I currently dig around in the notes in order to reacquaint myself with everything that has escaped me. As for example, the note that I have here regarding information that Semyase once gave me, it says here, Vega forms a new planetary system, and here the dust rings around the Sol system, and here the two other planets in the Sol system. With regard to these notes, I would like to know from you what it's all about, for I don't exactly remember." And Quetzal says, "About that, nothing should officially become known to the Earth people, for first towards the end of the year 1983 might be a right time for that. But until then, you do not provide the information to the Earth people, then I must be helpful to you in a short form. Concerning Vega, your note refers to the fact that the area of Lyra and Vega, a cosmic process takes place, which produces new stars. So there's something about this producing of the new stars that we can't know yet, but it's enough for us to know that in Lyra Vega, stars are being produced, which is very interesting. Then he goes on to talk about the fact that this will be grasped by Earth scientists in the near future. And he talks, and Quetzal continues here and says, "Your notes regarding the dust rings around the Sol system presumably may have been made by you with regard to the conversation in which Semyase explained to you the origin of the various fine dust rings around the Sol system, which were a surprise at that time when you became aware of them. They also tell us about two other planets, dwarf planets, which orbit our sun beyond the orbit of Pluto, and these are undiscovered minor planets that they call Ellen and Anar. In addition, there are two other unknowns called Uni and Trans-Pluto." So some interesting things about the star system, our galaxy, and the Meyer information I thought you might find interesting. I want to say hello to Eve and Kevin Crawford and Solon Henson and Tobias Davison. Thanks for stopping by. And I want to say hello to, we got a listener on the phone as well. I am going to try to play a clip, if possible. But my computer is not. Okay, let's try this again. I am going to try to play a clip. And if I become, if you guys can't hear anything, somebody please in the chat room let me know. This is a clip a little bit about the star systems and our solar system.
A prominent example is the center of the Milky Way. It can hardly be seen from the northern hemisphere, but from the south, it passes high overhead. And then there are the Magellanic Clouds, two small companion galaxies to the Milky Way. Invisible from the north, but very conspicuous if you're south of the equator. And then finally, European astronomers were hindered by light pollution and poor weather. Going south would solve most of their problems.
A scenic boat trip in the Netherlands, June 1953. It was here on the IJsselmeer that the German-American astronomer Walter Bade and the Dutch astronomer Jan Oort told colleagues about their plan for a European observatory in the southern hemisphere.
Individually, no one European country could compete with the United States, but together they might. 7 months later, 12 astronomers from six countries gathered here in the stately Senate room of Leiden University. They signed a statement expressing the desire to establish a European observatory in South Africa. This paved the way for the birth of ESO. But hang on, South Africa?
Well, it made sense, of course. South Africa already had the Cape Observatory, and after 1909, the Transvaal Observatory in Johannesburg. Leiden Observatory had its own southern station in Hartebeespoort. In 1955, astronomers set up test equipment to find the best possible spot for a big telescope. Zeekoeghat in the Great Karoo, or Tafelkopje near Bloemfontein. But the weather was not all that favorable. Around 1960, the focus shifted to the rugged landscape of northern Chile. American astronomers were also planning their own Southern Hemisphere observatory here. Harsh horseback expeditions revealed much better conditions than in South Africa.
In 1963, the die was cast. Chile it would be. 6 months later, Cerro La Silla was picked as the future site of the European Southern Observatory.
We could probably pick up that at another time. I just wanted to give you guys a little break there. It's sometimes nice to hear a clip about what's going on in the normal world of science. Anyway, I like to do the occasionally touch base on these ideas of these other stars and the history that has occurred related to humanity on Earth. But the most important information in the Meyer case is, I think, the spiritual teachings. And I think we should probably get back to those as well. One of the things that I wanted to talk about this evening is kind of religion and some of the ideas that came to Earth in various ways. And how did we invent or come up with the idea of the devil? And if you turn in the book called The Psyche, it starts on page 104, and it starts to talk about this idea of God, and the term God and where it came from, and where the term devil came from. And initially, the devil was the god of the hunt because he put in place his immense spiritual and consciousness-related powers. There, evidently, on Earth, there was some individual who had two horn-like growths on his skull. And this individual was named T-E-U-B-E-L, Tubal. I don't know if he was an extraterrestrial or human. I don't know any other thing about it. And upon his death, his position became personified. And he became kind of like a god, a Superman with horn-like growths. And over the course of centuries, Tubal was changed. This name was changed until the name Devil came about, a name which was seized upon by the religions, at least according to my material. And it was the memory of this horned god. And he became the evil counterpart of the other god, which was the unhorned god of goodness and love. And good and evil were created. Now we have this idea of good and evil, heaven and hell. And it was then easy for other people that the Meyer Information calls charlatans to instigate people. And these people that did this were good at inventing fables and stories. And they, through that, these ideas came into our religions. And the Meyer Information says that religious wars and religious hatred came about. And up to the present day, and there still is no end in sight to these terrible things. To this day, human beings bestially annihilate each other because of, the Meyer material says, because of the erroneous religions. And let me kind of step back a little bit. And I will give you the Meyer perspective, or to the best of my ability. Anyway, let's say that. The Meyer Information doesn't use the term God, but it uses the term creation. Because the term God, it says, is a old language of a foreign people. And that the creation is what's called the universal consciousness. It's not a heavenly father, but it is, you could call it, the intelligence behind our universe. You know, our universe, it has a physical structure. But when I talk about the universal consciousness, I'm talking about the intelligence behind our universe. And it's an intelligence that the Meyer Information says is neither good nor evil. It's not a heavenly father. It's a neutral, positive entity. It's a impersonal spiritual energy. It creates and builds universes as a part of its own evolution. It creates human spirits as a part of its own evolution. And the Meyer Information said that we should constantly contemplate the nature of creation, because billions of people are misled from religion and they don't understand the true nature of creation. Creation is an intelligence. And Emmanuel described it this way, that creation stands above humanity and everything else. And we look at creation as being a perfect thing, but it is not so. Emmanuel described creation as spirit, and it lives, and it's perfecting itself. And it perfects itself through the generation of new spirit forms that dwell within humans, give them life, and evolve towards perfection through learning. So the newly generated spirit is like a part of creation itself. But a newly generated spirit form is unknowing. It's very unknowing, and it lives in a human body, and it begins to learn. And that's how we all started out. And after a while, after many, many lifetimes, we become less and less unknowing. And eventually, we, in millions of years from now, our spirit forms will become even more knowing, and we will seek the greatest wisdom. And it's said that the human spirit perfects itself so extensively that it unfolds in a creational manner. And Emmanuel described it this way. He said, the spirit and the body are not a duality, but they are one. And the body comes from the spirit, but it's a different matter. It's a different substance, yet they're one. So that which is physical comes from the spiritual. And you can think of life and death as a cycle that goes from the spiritual to the physical and then back to the spiritual. And each time into the physical and then back through the spiritual side, the spirit form gains a little more intelligence and a little more wisdom and a little more power. So on the physical side, on the earth side, we have a coarse-mattered material life and a learning period, and there's evolution. But on the other side of the coarse-mattered life is the evolution of the spirit form. The spirit form absorbs the essences of what we learned through our consciousness, through our minds, in the physical side. But each time, and then those essences are stored in the spirit, and the memories are stored in the subconscious of the new mentality. So the preparation of the spirit form for the next material life takes place in the spiritual realm. And the way that the creation works, the way the universal conscious does this, is that we literally get a new consciousness and a new personality, which are formed in the spiritual realm. And this occurs in an area called the overall consciousness block. And it's a storage bank in the other world, and it's created by your spirit form. And the overall consciousness block is where our previous material consciousness is dissolved. And the essences are created of the love, the wisdom, the knowledge, the truth that we got from the previous life. And those are all absorbed by the spirit form. And the memories are stored in the subconscious of the new mentality. You know, we have a material consciousness and a spiritual consciousness. I think it's very important that we look at those two things that way. And the psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness. See, the human being of Earth, we've adopted an unpleasant habit of using what's called false word concepts and false things that we only partially understand. And one thing you have to remember about your spiritual consciousness, it can never be sick, it can never be confused, it can never be deranged, it will never become faulty in any way. The material consciousness can, but not the spiritual consciousness. The spiritual consciousness cannot become ill. It cannot become feeble-minded. Your material consciousness can. Your material consciousness can become confused and deranged. But your spirit is like a little piece of the creation. The spirit is invulnerable. It's untouchable. It's a creational product. The spirit has power, and the spirit also uses something called the swinging wave, schwingen in the German, electromagnetic swinging waves in the teaching of the spirit. They're periodically built up electronic and magnetic fields from your spirit form, which are not bound to any kind of coarse matter. They include energies and they unfold in forces, which can be immense. Your spirit form has immense power associated with it. We just don't know how to utilize it yet. So the material consciousness can have mental illness. It can have megalomania, haughtiness. But the spirit form will never be that way. The spirit form remains neutral, positive. So we here on the earth, we're very good at clothing matters and words and terms which are inappropriate. We, for example, have confused the psyche with the soul. And there are two different things. The psyche is the part of the material consciousness that controls the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness. Now, the gemut is the spiritual counterpart for the psyche. It's a spiritual block and factor within the spirit body of a life form that regulates and looks after the spirit consciousness-based feelings and the spirit consciousness-based thoughts. That's what the gemut is. The gemut, again, is a spiritual block and factor within the spirit body of the life form. The gemut, your gemut, cannot be influenced by any negative powers. It cannot be influenced by negative thoughts, only neutral positive ones. And your gemut is kind of, I think of it as like a connection to creation. In the gemut, there is always equalized harmony. You know how the Meyer material always says we should be neutral positive. We should have a lot equalized harmony. That's a creational natural law. It's the law of harmony. Our spirit form always exhibits this. This gemut in the spirit form supplies the psyche with these harmonious swinging waves. These swinging waves, they originate from what's called the realm of cosmic electromagnetic life energy. The spirit consciousness operates only in an equalized, neutral positive, harmonious form. So the gemut absorbs only that which is equalized, normalized. In fact, the gemut has no direct connections with the material body. If you're wondering where I'm getting this information, it's on page 12 of the book Psyche. In the Psyche, the first 20 pages, I read this. I'm embarrassed about how many times I've read this first 20 pages. It's taken me probably 30 or 40 times just to understand what it's saying. It's so profound. The Meyer material talks also about the mentality and what the mentality is. But I wanted to just quickly review the idea of the psyche and the gemut. I think these are very important concepts. Another one of my favorite books of Billy's is called The Way to Live. And I'm sure you've very much read this book. If you haven't gotten it yet, I recommend you get it. You can probably find it at, if you contact Michael Horn, and one of these days I'm going to have to actually start doing this the way FIGU wants us to do it and get these books through the FIGU websites. I wanted to talk about striving. Striving is, again, a creational natural law. The intelligence of the universe, this universal consciousness has set up these natural laws. If we live by them, we'll have a lot more happiness. One of these laws is striving. The other law that we were talking about is the law of reincarnation. And one thing that the law of reincarnation talks about is that this side, the physical side, and the other side, the spiritual side, they occupy the same space, but they are separated by two dimensions. We have the visible, palpable, material plane, but we also have an invisible plane, the spiritual plane. In the material plane, we have the physical life, and in the spiritual plane, we have the life of the other side, the life of the spirit. You know, and in both sides, we have striving. We do not escape striving by death. The spirit form goes into the spiritual realm, and it strives to absorb everything from the previous life that it can, while it works on creating the new personality. It says in the book of OM, therefore, that man liveth and dieth and is born again into a new body, and this type of becoming and passing away repeats itself until the time of time has arrived, at which the spirit form of man, as a minute part of creation, does not need a material human body for any further evolution. And in, I think it's on page 216 of the book, The Psyche, where it talks about the spirit form and the psyche again. And I mentioned this before, a very often neglected factor of reincarnation, rebirth, is that the creation, this minuscule particle of creation, your spirit form, has the task of absorbing all the accumulated knowledge from the previous lives. And this is very, very important. And it's striving, the striving of the spirit form when it's in the spirit realm, is for absorbing the information from the previous life. So in any case, the Meyer material says that striving is inhibited by our religions, by our sects, because of our wrong philosophies and because of our evolutive thinking is not promoted by the religions. Even pondering the truth is forbidden under certain religions. It says here that truly, if only one were to free the human being from his anxieties, then suffering would also become less and would also become much more bearable. You know, I think much of the suffering that we're experiencing in our planet right now is because of what I would, something that I would put as future shock. And there's a book out, a very old book, that talks about this phenomena. And one of the reasons we're having this, what I call future shock, things changing so quickly that you can't keep track of them. This creates this sense of disorientation. And like, you know, the ultimate difference of, if you go into a forest, you absorb the stillness of the forest. It's what you absorb. That's one of the reasons I always play the sounds of nature at the beginnings of the program, is so that you absorb that stillness, that peace from nature. In our overpopulated state, we have no sense of stillness. We have this sense of constant change. And this horrific change which is occurring is in part because of overpopulation. And the change and the instability manifests itself in some very unpleasant ways. Roughly 4 million people are born on the street and die on the street in India every year, for example. Roughly 18 million people starve to death every year in the world. I call the Earth the planet of unnecessary death. None of these people have to starve to death. No, they don't. If we would just get our population under control, if we would just utilize the food that we have, we could even feed pretty much all the people that we have, even though we're in this horrifically overpopulated state. You know, there are 9,000 newborns per hour. Think about that. Over the number of deaths. If you take the number of people that are born every hour, subtract the number of deaths, you have 9,000 newborns every day. Somewhere between 80 million and 100 million people are added to the world's population every year. That's like five gigantic cities every year just popping up. That's a state of change that no one can deal with that kind of change. And that's what we're going to see here in the very, very near future, an accelerated rate of change in our world. Let me give you an example of another one of these countries that's horrifically overpopulated. Bangladesh has over 140 million people in it. It's a country the size of Iowa. You know, their Islamic leaders in that country do not allow birth control. And they have, some people say, as much as 167 million people in Bangladesh. Now, what does that lead to? That leads to 10 million children dying every year from starvation and diseases. As I said, somewhere between 80 and 100 million people are born. Their population grows by that. In America, what we're going to feel very shortly is the incredible influx of all of these immigrants from all over the world. And this is all because of the gigantic overpopulation and the pseudo-relief that comes from these charities that feed these people that don't teach them to control their populations. They cause bigger problems. You know, people, they don't even lift a finger anymore in the creation of their own food. We have unreasonable thinking today. Mankind supports these relief organizations that feed people without bringing them any education. So they just repeat the same population, the same problem of over-procreation. Overpopulation, it leads to crime, wars, addiction, and many other problems. Many ills of religion and of political nature come from overpopulation. We are destroying the oxygen-rich rainforests, which regulate our climate. We are in the process of clearing our rainforests and burning our forests to access parcels of land for construction sites. We do not understand the importance of the forests. The forests regulate our climate, and that's why now we have this horrific problem of the continual change that's occurring in our climates and the continual extremes of weather that we're facing. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the show this evening. Welcome again to Ohio Exopolitics. We have a guest coming on Wednesday of this week, Robert Stanley, Wednesday the 17th. He's going to be talking to us about transhumanism. That's on Ohio Exopolitics at 8 p.m. Eastern. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.